got into, you know, Chris Brown has a son, right? His son has been born, maybe he's like 6 months now, maybe. He's getting big and he's so precious. His name is Aiko Katori. My name is Nikki Strong and this is VOA 1 The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, Ashley and I will bring you stories along with Anna Mateo. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, the United States has awarded $1.6 billion to Novavax to pay for testing and manufacturing of a possible coronavirus vaccine. The Department of Health and Human Services announced the government's choice of the Maryland-based company. The award is the biggest yet under an effort called Operation Warp Speed. President Donald Trump and his aides set up the program to speed up development of vaccines and treatments to fight COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. The department released a statement from Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar. He said, "The addition of Novavax's candidate vaccine to Operation Warp Speed increases the odds that we will have at least one safe, effective vaccine as soon as the end of this year." The Reuters news agency spoke with Novavax chief executive Stanley Erck. He noted that what this Warp Speed award does is it pays for production of 100 million doses, which may be completed by January or February of next year. The award will also help pay for the cost of a large Phase 3 trial, the final stage of human testing, which could begin as early as October. Separately, the U.S. government awarded $450 million to Regeneron Pharmaceuticals to make and supply its antibody treatment for COVID-19. Just a day earlier, Regeneron announced that it has started Phase 3 testing to measure the effectiveness of patients' antibodies in preventing and treating the disease. Tuesday's announcements follow a $456 million government investment in Johnson & Johnson's vaccine candidate in March and a $486 million award to Moderna Incorporated in April. The government also promised up to $1.2 billion in support in May for a vaccine being developed by AstraZeneca with Britain's Oxford University. The U.S. government also gave Emergent BioSolutions $628 million in June to expand the country's ability to make a possible vaccine and drugs to treat COVID-19. In total, the government currently supports over 50 programs to develop vaccines and treatments for COVID-19. Novavax is somewhat of an unknown in the race for a coronavirus vaccine. The company has yet to produce a licensed vaccine of any kind. And it did not start human safety trials for the coronavirus vaccine until late May. In May, Novavax received $388 million from a group called the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations. And the U.S. Defense Department gave the company $60 million in June to support manufacturing of 10 million doses of its vaccine in 2020. The Novavax vaccine works together with an adjuvant, a substance that strengthens the body's ability to fight the virus. The French drug maker Sanofi uses the same basic technology to make flu vaccine, so the risk of us not succeeding is pretty low, noted Gregory Glenn. He is a doctor and president of research and development for Novavax. Currently, Novavax makes its adjuvant in Sweden. The company is hoping to build factories in the U.S., Europe, and India. While coronavirus cases in the U.S. are rising, China's government has reported more success in controlling the disease. This makes it harder for China to conduct large-scale human trials for a possible vaccine. With concerns over issues of quality and safety, Chinese officials are facing difficulties in persuading the U.S. and European countries to cooperate. This has forced China to bring the government, the military, and businesses together in the race to develop a coronavirus vaccine. China is behind 8 of the 19 vaccine candidates listed by the World Health Organization in human trials. Johns Hopkins University's Coronavirus Resource Center estimated that, as of July 7th, the virus has infected nearly 3 million people in the United States. About 130,000 U.S. deaths have resulted from COVID-19. Around the world, the disease has infected nearly 12 million people and killed 540,000.
In its more than 1,400-year existence, Hagia Sophia in Istanbul has meant many things to many groups of people. The building served for centuries as the main religious center for Christians in the Byzantine Empire. Under Ottoman rule, it was used as an Islamic religious center. Today, it serves as a museum. Millions of people visit the famous domed structure each year. UNESCO, the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, recognizes it as a World Heritage Site. Now, the 6th century building is at the center of a heated debate between nationalist, conservative, and religious groups. Some people want Hagia Sophia returned to Muslims so they can use it as a mosque. Others want it to remain a museum. Observers say this debate represents Istanbul's importance as a bridge between continents and cultures. On July 2nd, Turkey's Council of State began studying a request by a group seeking to change Hagia Sophia back into a mosque. The group making that request wants to cancel a 1934 decision by the Council of Ministers. That decision turned the historic structure into a museum. At the time, the head of the group was Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, the founder of modern Turkey. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan leads a political party that is closely allied to Islamic groups. He has spoken before about possibly changing Hagia Sophia's status to a mosque. Some observers say they believe he is using the Hagia Sophia debate to strengthen his support with voters and to draw attention away from Turkey's economic problems. An expert on Turkey notes that this is not just a debate about a building. Soner Çaptay works for the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, a research group based in the United States. He also wrote a book called Erdogan's Empire. Çaptay says Atatürk established Hagia Sophia as a museum to create a secular Turkey. And nearly 100 years later, he continued, Erdogan is trying to do the opposite. Çaptay said that Erdogan feels the pressure of popular support lessening. Çaptay said he believes the Turkish leader may want to use the debate issue to win back political support. But Çaptay said that will only bring voters back temporarily. If Erdogan does not deliver economic growth, Çaptay added, he may not be able to win elections as he did in the past. Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew I is considered the spiritual leader of the world's Orthodox Christians. In early July, he noted that Hagia Sophia served as a place of worship for Christians for 900 years and for Muslims for 500 years. He added that as a museum, Hagia Sophia can serve as a place of peaceful coexistence of peoples and cultures, and a unity between Christianity and Islam. Islamic groups, however, strongly object to the building's use as a museum. Large crowds gathered outside Hagia Sophia on May 31st, the anniversary of the city's capture by Ottoman forces. They prayed and demanded that it be restored as a place of Muslim worship. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has urged Turkey to keep the famous structure as a museum. In a statement, he said Hagia Sophia has a rare ability in the modern world to serve humanity as a much-needed bridge between those of differing faith traditions and cultures. A change in its status, he added, will lessen that ability. I'm Ana Mateo.
International students will be forced to leave the United States or change colleges if their school plans to offer online-only classes later this year. The requirement is part of new guidance from U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. The federal agency announced the measures on Monday. They provide additional pressure for universities to reopen as concern grows about the spread of COVID-19 among young adults. Colleges learned of the rules the same day that some schools, including Harvard University, announced that all classes this autumn would be offered online. U.S. President Donald Trump has urged schools and colleges to restart in-person classes as soon as possible. Soon after the guidance was released, Trump wrote on Twitter that schools must reopen this fall. He said Democratic Party lawmakers want to keep schools closed for political reasons, not for health reasons. U.S. immigration officials suspended some requirements for international students early in the pandemic. But colleges were waiting for guidance on what would happen in the fall. ICE told schools of the changes Monday and said that official rules would be available soon. Under the rules, international students must take at least some of their classes in person. New visas will not be given to students at schools or programs that are fully online. Even at colleges offering a mix of in-person and online classes, international students will be barred from taking all of their classes online. The rules create an urgent problem for thousands of international students. Many became trapped in the United States last spring after the coronavirus forced their schools to move online. International students who attend schools that are staying online must depart the country or take other measures, such as transferring to a school with in-person instruction, ICE said. The American Council on Education, which represents university presidents, described the guidelines as horrifying. An international student may have to leave the U.S. if their school experiences an outbreak and goes fully online after the fall term begins. It is not clear what would happen if a student was in such a situation, but faced travel restrictions from their home country, said Terry Hartle, the council's senior vice president. The international education group, NAFSA, also criticized the rules. It said school officials should be given the power to make decisions that are right for their own campuses. It said the guidance is harmful to international students and puts their health and well-being and that of the entire higher education community at risk. Nearly 400,000 foreigners received student visas in the 12-month period that ended on September 30, 2019. That number is down more than 40% from 4 years earlier. School administrations partly blame visa processing delays. Colleges and universities across the U.S. were already expecting a sharp drop in international student numbers this fall. But losing all international students could be disastrous for some schools. Many depend heavily on tuition payments from international students, who often pay higher rates. Critics of Trump sharply criticized the new guidance. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, an independent, said the cruelty of this White House knows no bounds. Foreign students are being threatened with a choice: risk your life going to class in person or get deported, Sanders wrote on Twitter. Many colleges have said they plan to offer at least some classes in person this fall, but some say it is too risky. Last week, the University of Southern California changed its plan to bring students to campus, with officials saying classes will instead be offered mostly online. On Monday, Harvard said it plans to invite only first-year students to live on its grounds. Its classes, however, will stay online.
Are you at risk of getting seriously ill from the new coronavirus? Here are some things to keep in mind. 80% of coronavirus cases are mild. Young and healthy people are at low risk. Other people and those with serious health conditions have a greater risk of serious illness or even death. If you have a cough, fever, and difficulty breathing, contact a doctor and stay away from other people. For more information, visit the World Health Organization website at www.who.int or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are continuing our story about Abraham Lincoln. He led the United States during the Civil War, which lasted from 1861 to 1865. In that conflict, the Southern Confederacy battled the Union, the states that supported the federal government. Southern states wanted to make their own laws, including those that protected slavery. They were afraid that President Lincoln would use the power of the federal government to ban slavery in their states, as well as in other areas. So 11 Southern states withdrew from the rest of the country. They stopped recognizing the power of the central government. President Lincoln did not think states had the right to withdraw. He said he was fighting to reunite the country. But in time, he accepted that the Civil War would also be a fight to end slavery. Lincoln is known for several qualities as a wartime president. One was how he led the military campaign. As president, Lincoln worked with top military officials to create a plan. They realized that the Union had more resources and more men who could fight than the Confederate forces. So they planned to surround the Southern states, cut off their supplies, and prevent foreign powers from helping the Confederacy. Lincoln hoped the Union's generals could execute the plan quickly and end the war as soon as possible. But the generals were guarded. They did not want to harm their soldiers if they did not have to. They also knew the Confederacy had a skilled commander in General Robert E. Lee. Troops under another Confederate general, Thomas Stonewall Jackson, also defeated the Union Army in several early battles. Lincoln was frustrated with the war effort. He wanted generals who would not only win battles, but chase after the opposing forces and destroy them so they could not fight again. In one famous telegram, he wrote to his top general, George McClellan. Lincoln said, "If General McClellan does not want to use the army, I would like to borrow it for a time." Finally, Lincoln replaced McClellan. Then he replaced McClellan's replacements. Lincoln changed the presidency by being actively involved as a commander-in-chief of the military. He also greatly expanded the powers of the chief executive. Lincoln believed that, during war, the president had powers that were greater than those of Congress and the Supreme Court. As a result, he took many actions that critics, and even some supporters, considered illegal under the U.S. Constitution. For example, Lincoln spent millions of dollars in federal money without getting permission from Congress. He also limited freedom of the press, restricted mail service, and declared martial law in some places, even when the situation did not require military action. Most notably, Lincoln temporarily suspended the writ of habeas corpus. Habeas corpus is an important right in the American legal tradition. It means that people who are under arrest have the right to appear personally in court. But at some periods, Lincoln ignored that right. He said the Confederacy's rebellion justified his actions. And he said extreme measures were necessary to reunite the country. One of Lincoln's most important legacies relates to slavery. The issue was at the heart of the American Civil War. For most of his career, Lincoln spoke against slavery, but he did not try to bar the custom in states where it already existed. He agreed to leave slavery in the South alone. Lincoln also did not really believe in racial equality. And he worried that if slavery ended in the United States, blacks and whites would not be able to live peacefully together. But as the war continued, Lincoln changed his mind about how to deal with the issue. For one thing, anti-slavery activists were urging Lincoln to end slavery for moral reasons. Lincoln also considered tactical reasons, those related to the war. He saw that enslaved people in the South were escaping to join Union armies in the North. Their actions helped the Union effort. Lincoln also wanted to prevent England or France from helping the South. The Southern states were important trading partners for Europe, but the English and French people had rejected slavery. Lincoln hoped that if the Union also rejected slavery, European countries would support the North, or at least not support the South. So Lincoln waited until the Union won a major battle in Antietam, Maryland. Then he announced that he was using his power as a wartime president to order the end of slavery in the Confederate States. He produced a document called the Emancipation Proclamation. It said that enslaved people in the rebelling states were forever free. Historians note that the act was important and revolutionary, but it was mostly symbolic. The federal government was not able to enforce the order at the time, and it did not deal with enslaved people in other areas. But the Emancipation Proclamation was the beginning of the end of legal slavery in the country. During the rest of his presidency, Lincoln worked in support of an anti-slavery amendment to the Constitution. That amendment, the 13th, was approved in 1865. It officially outlawed slavery across the country. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.